Welcome everybody to the Tech Woke Podcast. On this podcast, we talk about cyber career and life. And my name is Chris. And in today's podcast, we're going to talk to a person I met at Techsgiving. Shout out to Techsgiving. She has about 15 years of cybersecurity experience. She's a cybersecurity SME, cybersecurity engineer, also did digital forensics and network forensics. And she also owns her own government contracting business, SciTech Solutions. Without further ado, we're going to talk to Herlane Muhammad.
Hello. Hey, everyone. Thank you for having me. That was a great intro.
I got you. Yeah, it's good having you.
Thank you.
You just hopped off the plane and you're here. You tired?
A little bit, but not really. I thought I'd be a little more tired, but the jet lag hasn't hit me yet.
But I haven't hit you yet. I would have been knocked out.
Yeah, I just came back from Saudi Arabia for everybody wondering.
Oh, Saudi Arabia? Okay, that's good.
Thank you.
So, Herlane, tell me about your early life around high school time. Tell me about what got you into tech in your high school, or just tell me about your early life in high school.
So originally the plan was not to go into tech. So my mom was really big on medical field. You know, my mom was a nurse, but she was in the Army as well. So she did about 24 years in the Army. Mm-hmm. And then she was doing nursing, and all of us, she was trying to kind of push me and my siblings to go into medical school, because when you're African, that's your only choice in life.
Trust me, I know.
You can do medical school or be an engineer. That's it, doctor engineer. So, you know, my mom was like, okay, you guys are all going to be doctors. And so she signed us up for school to do biology and pre-med. And so both of my siblings are doctors. They stuck with it. One's a pharmacist and one's a physical therapist. My other sister's a nurse. And then I just did not want to do that. I was very anti. I don't like being told what to do or, like, you know, forced into a direction. But medical just wasn't really speaking to me. And so I joined the Army because I ended up graduating high school early. I graduated when I was 16. And I did a year of pre-med biology, and I just didn't like it. So I was like, I just want to be on my own, try to figure out what it is that I want to do after that. So I went and I scored really well on the ASVAB test. And he said, hey, you can do intelligence or IT. And I chose to do IT. So it was just ever since then, I've stuck with it and decided not to finish out school for medical.
Okay, for medical. So let me just go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I do know when you was younger, was you doing IT when you was younger? I know you know.
I did a program. Yeah. So in Texas, well, they have it everywhere. The Workforce Commission. So even like DC has their own Workforce Commission. They had a summer youth program for ages 14 to 24, I believe, where you can do any type of job. They'll just place you in a job placement. They want like to do workforce development for the community. So I did that. I did an IT internship with them. And that was my first, I guess, introduction into IT. But it was more of like admin assistant work. It wasn't really IT. It was just like fix the phone if the phone had an issue, or Word documents or things like that. But that was my intro to IT, I guess you could say.
Did you enjoy it, or was it kind of like...
I enjoyed it. My very first job, I was just bagging groceries. So it was something different from doing that.
I
enjoyed it, yeah.
Okay, so you passed. You got a really high score on your ASVAB. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I'm going to do IT. So explain your experience. What did you do in your first IT position inside the Army?
So it was an IT specialist, which was a 25 Bravo. It was very generalized, the way that it works with the Army MOSs, that you can have specific jobs, which is like 25 uniform or 25 R. They do radio, satellite communications. Mm-hmm. Some people are just like help desk or network, but IT specialist embodies everything. So it was a very just generalized role. We did a lot of network administration from a server administration as well. So like sysadmin work, security as well, information assurance, and like RMF, we did a lot of things with EMAS, and then SATCOM, so like satellite communications as well as radio communications. So it was a little bit all over the place, but it was helpful because I got to experience everything to kind of see where it is that I want to go within IT.
That's good, because I'm currently an information system security officer. We deal with EMAS, and I wish we could do, but that's a good melting pot to get everything to know. That's good. Did you get any certifications while you was in the military?
Yeah. So when you go through basic training and then AIT, within AIT, they send us to basic, AIT is your workforce development school program that they do for your training. We got all of like the network plus security plus and server administration courses. You can take a voucher for it and actually test for the exams afterwards, which some people don't know about. We get vouchers for free from actually doing those courses. So they prepare you for it. And then I went and tested with CompTIA.
Oh, this was up. So you just knocked them all out in one go. So,
well, not one go though. Failed at first.
You failed at least. Hey, being honest.
Yeah, not one go, but yes, I tried to finish it.
Hey, but you got all of them. So you got all those. You got the security plus, the network plus, some of the entry level ones.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, tell me about some of the benefits of being inside the military that can help somebody out that's maybe considering it. Tell me.
Benefits. There's a lot of benefits, but if we just focus on IT specifically, like I feel like there's nothing better than IT when it comes for the military. Certification, any certification you want, you can get. Like some of the most expensive ones are SAN certifications, which cost up to like $8,000 per cert. So the military will cover all of that costs. On top of that, the education benefits, which is unmatched. So you get GI Bill, which you'll get free tuition on top of getting housing paid for, like a stipend for it when you're actually in school as well. So that's one of the other ones you can get. I was in reserves also. So they have the state tuition assistance program that mm-hmm. you can get with National Guard for state, as well as just the regular federal tuition assistance. So that's another thing you can use on top of your GI Bill. And then one of the things that I used was the Hazelwood Act, which is in Texas. I don't know if they have something similar in any of the other states, but in Texas, if you join and enlist in the military, you can get exempt from paying tuition at any state school that you go to. Mm-hmm. So like University of Texas, Austin, University of Houston, that's you'll right. get exempt tuition from any of the schools that you choose to go to on top of getting to keep your GI Bill money, your tuition assistance, and just being able to pocket that. So it's a lot. It's a lot of really good benefits, especially if you want to get tech. But the number one is experience, for sure. Okay. You can't beat that. Like the hands-on experience we got in the military carried me throughout my entire career. I didn't even need to have a degree for a long time because the experience that I had superseded that.
Okay, that's what's up. Also, can you touch on this? You know, you said all the great benefits, but the main one I want to touch on is the security clearance. Can you, mm-hmm. can you talk about the value of it?
I didn't even touch on that one. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot. The clearance mm-hmm. is another one. So the security clearance is something, one, I didn't understand when I was going in because I was 16 when I joined. So I'm sorry, 17. So I didn't really even understand what a clearance was. And my mom filled out the paperwork for me to get it. So at the time when I was going in, I didn't understand the value of it. People would just say, hey, you can use this to get a job when you get out. But it's really about just being able to have access to certain information that other people don't. And in cybersecurity, we are securing that information. So it's very important to be in a role where you can be cleared to be able to secure that. There's also more pay for it when you get out of the military, and also the roles when you're in the military as well, too. But getting out of the military, if you want to work in a government contractor, if you want to work for like a federal agency, having that clearance helps because you're not going to look to be able to get sponsored for it, which a lot of people, that's kind of an issue that they get into if they weren't prior military, of finding a company to be able to sponsor them because you can't get it on your own.
Okay, that's good. Can you kind of touch on some of the levels of security clearances just so the audience will know?
Yeah. So with the there's unclassified and classified. But when classified, there's public trust, which is just like the basic level. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to secret, top secret. And then within top secret, they have certain need to knows. So like SCI, secret compartmentalized information. They have SBBI. And then they have what is it called for the White House? I'm drawing like whiskey. I'm sorry, Yankee White clearance for the White House. So that's the quote unquote top level. But if you've got access to the president, then that's what you're going to have to get.
So just to transition. So what did you do after the military? So you did your military mm-hmm. time. How long did you do it? How long was you in the military?
6 years.
6 years. So yeah. You did 6 years. So what was your plan after?
So after I got out, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school. And then I was trying to do pre-med still. So I was okay. just like still stuck with that. I was like, let me just try to do pre-med, making my mom happy. But I did it for 2 years and I didn't like it. I was still working IT at the time, though, at a hospital, mm-hmm. which was St. Luke's Health. They got bought out by CHI, Catholic Health Initiatives. Mm-hmm. So I was working with them. And then there's another IT staffing agency called Insight Global. Mm-hmm. So I worked with them for a little bit, too, and then decided that I didn't want to continue to pursue that for school and changed it and then ended up going to the cybersecurity route instead.
Okay, so what was the type of roles you were doing in those two, one Inside Global and the other one?
Literally like worked it from the bottom up because I did that for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. But I did starting off with help desk and mm-hmm. then went off to system administration, vulnerability management, and then cybersecurity engineering, just basic SOC analyst work.
Okay, so you started from the bottom. Mm-hmm. The bottom. Can you explain to the audience that's listening the benefits of doing a help desk? Because sometimes it can be frowned upon, mm-hmm. but some of the benefits of working help desk, system administrator, just some of those roles. What skills can you learn from those?
A lot, for sure. So like help desk number one is troubleshooting. You're going to be also customer front facing. So that's something that is really helpful when you're going to be in an IT career. A lot of it is also customer front facing. Mm-hmm. Things like system administration, people don't realize that all of that is also part of cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So if you look at like the NICE framework, they have different areas of cybersecurity. So like operate and govern is where help desk, sysadmin, network admin all fall under with cybersecurity, which are the front line of defense. So like, you know, MGM got hacked recently. We'd mm-hmm. heard about that. And with MGM, the help desk was the main entry route into the company mm-hmm. that they were able to just call up and say, hey, I'm a user. I need my password reset. So help desk is going to be front line of defense when it comes to cybersecurity. A lot of people don't understand and see that. So it's really important. And then sysadmin, when I was sysadmin, we were doing things like I was writing PowerShell scripts or mm-hmm. Bash scripts. And whenever we wanted to get all of the images on all of the PCs, which is really helpful. Now I know how to read PowerShell scripts because of that. So mm-hmm. I can see when those scripts are being used maliciously mm-hmm. in the log. So it's the same thing. We're seeing the same like Windows user accounts being logged into PowerShell scripts being used for malicious purposes. Those are the logs that security personnel are reading, mm-hmm. which is what you're going to be seeing as a help desk or sysadministration personnel, especially like Active Directory. Mm-hmm. If you're working on help desk, you go and reset a password through Active Directory. I'm able to see that as a security personnel, and I can say, hey, this password has been reset 100 times within the past hour versus it being reset manually by a person should have only been one time. So we'll know a brute force attack is happening because of that. Mm-hmm. Things along those lines. So it helps set you up to have a holistic understanding of cybersecurity in the long run versus somebody who didn't do that. They might not necessarily understand what it is they're looking at.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah. And this is good. Like you said, it's a good starter and to slowly get to the, especially everybody want to be a SOC analyst now. So you can't do that. It's better to start from the bottom. Now you're here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I completely agree. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. People have like this misconceived notion sometimes where it's like, oh, I'm just going to come in 6 weeks, do a boot camp, get six figures right after. Like you need to also put in the work. And it's like a lot of learning too, a lot of learning, a lot of responsibility within cybersecurity. So there's a lot of good money in it, but they have to be willing to pay you if they know that you're going to actually do what you're asked and tasked to do.
Okay, so you did all these, you did these roles. What was next after that? Are you still in school?
Government contracting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so actually I finished school, but I actually dropped out of school for when I was doing the pre-med at University of Houston, and that's when I decided to do online schooling. So that's when I switched to doing online school and then got into government contracting. And the first one that I went to was New Mexico.
Okay, so you got into, because just to pedal back, did you focus on government contracting coming out of school? I mean, okay, you did the positions. Mm-hmm. Did you at one point say, I didn't want to do this no more, or you?
Yeah, no, I wanted to do government contracting. Oh, you always wanted to do it? I've always wanted to do it, but it was kind of just like iffy about it. I was like, let me finish school first. And I put a lot of focus into just doing school because my family's always like really big on education. But afterwards, I was like, no, I'm just going to stick to government contracting. I've been working IT, but that was all of like the enterprise side. It wasn't actually with government contracting IT, so I wanted to switch back to that. And then my clearance lapsed. That's when I learned about, you know, the importance of a clearance, because the clearance that I had while I was in the military ended up lapsing since I wasn't using it out of school. So I was out of the military and I wasn't in a role that requires it. So after 2 years, that's when it gets inactive. And so I found a company that was willing to sponsor me. So that's when I ended up moving, which was Jacobs Technology, to New Mexico. Okay. And they re-sponsored me for a top secret clearance.
Well, that's what's up. So you just went and got, hey, anybody trying to get a clearance, hey, go down to New Mexico,
yeah,
AC.
Yeah. Yeah. Which a lot of people don't realize. There's a lot of companies that are willing to sponsor, but it depends where you're willing to go. Mm-hmm. So like New Mexico, Arizona, places that are like quote unquote unsexy that people don't really want to go live in. Very easy to get sponsored for a clearance in those places. Overseas too, if you're willing to travel overseas, like Kuwait, Bahrain, any of like the Middle East, even like Europe as well, they're willing to sponsor for clearances out there also. And not even for IT personnel, just for like all jobs, whether you want to do like physical security, be a janitor, you can go get your clearance and then come back and work in the States.
Okay. And also too, I think another route that I see a lot of people in this area do, they go to physical security route if they can, is that a good route to go?
Yeah, okay. Excellent. Anything that's going to get you the clearance, but go for a top secret, like, you know, go for the highest one.
So top secret is probably what people need to focus on.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's good.
But there's a lot of secret clearance as well that you can get. Any clearance is good. It's better than not having a clearance. But if you have the ability, go for the top, or always try to get the clearance that you have upgraded to whatever is above it.
Okay, so you're in New Mexico. What are you doing in New Mexico?
So I was the IT site director there and also the cybersecurity lead for the vulnerability management team.
Okay, vulnerability management. And just to dive into vulnerability management, can you explain what are you doing for the position?
So with that, we had a team of 6 or 7 cybersecurity analysts. Some of them were contractors. Some of them were the Air Force personnel. They would do vulnerability scans using a tool called ACAS Nessus, which is Tenable. So they would just do scans through that, and then they would have to patch whatever is found from those vulnerabilities in the scans, and then also do POAMs, which is plans of actions and milestones for other vulnerabilities. If depending on if it was going to be patched in time or not, they'll just put those milestones in there of what needs to be remediated.
Okay, so you're like checking for like high, mediums, low, or cat ones, cat out. Okay.
Yep, for all the critical vulnerabilities.
Well, that's interesting. So you're doing that for, how long you was doing that for?
About 2 years.
2 years, yeah. So you're doing that position 2 years. So you just came back to DC or the DMV area, or?
Yeah, I moved to the DMV area after that because that was during the pandemic.
Okay, during the pandemic. Yeah. So you was thugging it out during the pandemic.
I did. And it was very remote there. There was nothing to do.
I got you. Hey, yeah. That's the best place. So when you came back to the DMV, what were you doing? What positions did you move into DMV? Is that when you started getting into like cyber security engineering, or?
Yeah, so that's when I came to the Pentagon. That was the first role that I had when I moved here. I was working with Apex Systems and I was doing security engineering with them. And then over a time, they switched the role, created a role for us for countermeasures engineering. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've done, detection engineering with them. So started off with Apex Systems and then was able to get out of that contract. And that's when we have the contract now with Cytech for them.
Okay, so just to double back to the positions, I always try to figure out, what is this? What does a cybersecurity engineer do?
So cybersecurity engineer is a little different versus like an analyst. So analyst is more about like triaging, looking at alerts, doing actual technical analysis. Engineering is building out the tools that those analysts are looking at. So Splunk, for instance, Splunk Engineering will go in and build out the entire Splunk Enterprise or Enterprise Security within it. We'll create all of the alerts that the analysts are seeing. So we'll create them from scratch and write the scripts for it. The other tools, some of the other tools that they use as well, will do that as well for like EDR tools, HBSS, if you're familiar with HBSS.
HBSS, yeah. I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So anything to do with endpoint engineering as well.
Okay. Can you explain a little bit about endpoint? Because I want to know too. So you explain more about endpoint. What is a
endpoint? So an endpoint is basically anything that is being used. So a computer can be an endpoint. Okay. A server can be an endpoint. Any of the tools that we're using that the users are going to be using on the network. There are different endpoints on the network or different entry points also into the network. So all of those, like a computer, not a computer, but an enterprise can have 3,000 endpoints that are on it.
Okay. So for cybersecurity engineer, is that a blue team position or is it a red team position?
Cybersecurity engineer is more blue team.
Okay, yeah. Blue team. So blue team is basically defending the system.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Defending and detections.
Okay, so what route would somebody go to get into cybersecurity engineer? What skills would they need to learn?
Definitely how to use the tools. So if you're going to be building them, you need to know also how to use them. So if you do a couple of years of just analysis on those tools, then you want to go into the engineering route. The other one is detections and how detections work and how they're built out. So like YARR rules, SNORT rules, Sigma rules. Those are all different types of detections that are built into the tools. And then Splunk is like correlation searches. You also have to have a strong network fundamentals analysis of just overall how the networks work if you're going to be building out detections for them. Because you want to be able to, you don't want to have a lot of false positives for the analyst to triage. So then you want to know how the network works, what's the initial access areas or different vectors that the attackers can use when they want to get into the network too, so that you're able to be able to create those detections around it. And then also threat intelligence, staying on top of everything that's coming out so that you can create those detections quicker.
Okay, so do you need to learn any type of coding for this, for that position?
Not necessarily. You don't need to learn it, but it'll help you to learn it. So also, some of the detection languages, I could call it coding in itself, they're all different languages. So like YARA rules has a specific syntax that you need to know and understand. Same thing with SNORT and Sigma, which they're very basic and easy to learn compared to actually software development. But it's important to know. I think it'll help you. If you know Python and have an understanding of Linux as well, that'd be really helpful.
Do you know where anybody, do you know any good websites for people to practice with this? Maybe try Hack Me, something like that?
Yeah, try Hack Me is an excellent one. That's one of my favorites to go to. There's Blue Team Detections is another really good one. TMC Security has a lot of also, they have Blue Team and Red Team items too that you guys can do. If you want detection specific, just go to the YARR rules, Sigma rules, and SNORT rules white papers.
White paper, okay. Mm-hmm.
The white papers, if you just go to the website, it has it written out how to read and understand and write those YARA rules and SNORT rules and whatever else for detections.
Okay, so what non-technical skills would you need for this position? Because I learned something when I got into cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, when I used to be a project manager. So when I got in, it's like a whole thing you follow. Like, it's a cut and dry paper. So, like, I had to learn once I get into cybersecurity, you got to kind of use your brain. So what non-technical skills would you probably need for this position?
Number one, definitely just how to talk to people, being a personable person. That's something that's missing for a lot of IT personnel. You know, they're like, especially the ones that are very technical, sometimes they don't really know how to foster the communication when it comes to people. So they'll just like be a little bit rude or just expect you to know something. There's like a kind of a gatekeeping attitude where if you come in and you're new and you don't really understand, I'll just brush you off and I'll try to help you. So if you're a personable person and it's like, hey, you're willing to help everybody that comes and you're a team player, that's going to get you far for sure. That's definitely going to get you far and that'll be noticed. Also, communication skills, again, is number one. Documentation, everything we have to write. So if you know how to do technical documentation, writing SOPs, writing emails, and then being able to take really hard technical things and explain it on a level that's a little bit more high if you're talking to like stakeholders or you're talking to someone who doesn't understand, that's something that's also important to learn how to develop.
So Herlane, for a cybersecurity engineer, can you tell me like what some certifications that would help for the position?
Yeah, so for cybersecurity engineering, it depends. So CISSP is always one of the main top certifications that HR looks for. With cybersecurity engineering, though, you can also break it down. Like SANS has a lot of really great certifications that you can go after. If you want to get more into the red teaming as well, there's OSCP, which is a really great one to go after as well. And then with engineering specifically, like, it's better to focus on the actual tool that you're working on. So if you're going to be cybersecurity engineering, you're cloud focused, you want to work on just Azure Sentinel, then you want to go after any of the Microsoft certifications for that. Mm-hmm. Splunk, if you want to be a Splunk engineer, then you want to go after the Splunk specific certifications. So it's important to know, like, which vendor specific tool that you're working on.
Okay, understood. So I just wanted to, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, and can you tell me about some of what you did for as a network forensics? What did you do for that position?
Yeah, so I was a network forensics administrator with CISA. So mm-hmm. I was working with CISA doing network forensics with their Hunt team. So mm-hmm. they have the Hunt incident response team. We would go on engagements typically. So they'll send out a team of network forensics, cloud forensics, host forensics, an engagement lead and an incident manager to different companies or sites or agencies that get hacked essentially. Mm-hmm. So when they get hacked, CISA works with all critical infrastructure in the U.S., so they will call us, they'll put in a request, and we'll come out and support them. So I was the network forensics team lead for that. Some of the different things that we did, one of the main ones we worked on was like the attack that just happened in Guam last year.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the most like high profile ones that I worked on with CISA. I was the team lead for that network forensics, and we went out and deployed to Guam for that.
Okay, so hey, with cybersecurity, you can travel the world. So that's what I'm saying. And then for that position, do you recommend any certs for that also? Would you do a SANS cert maybe?
For SANS, SANS is always good to get. It's mm-hmm. just really expensive. So especially if you're in the military, I would say stock up and get as many SANS certs as you can. For that, network forensics role is a little bit different because it wasn't very much so specialized. We did a little bit of everything with network forensics. So we would have to go and deploy and put all of our different tools onto their network, gather their information, get it spun up into Splunk, and then do the actual network analysis on it. So it was important to kind of know a little bit of everything with that role.
Okay, that's interesting. So I wanted to dive into some of the personal questions of mm-hmm. working in cybersecurity for you. Mm-hmm. So when you first started getting into cybersecurity, did you ever feel nervous about doing any of the roles?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you feel probably like every role.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever goes away, the little feeling of imposter syndrome, because yeah. every single job is different. So mm-hmm. it's like, I might have an understanding of how to be a sysadmin, but a sysadmin at the hospital is going to be different versus a sysadmin at an oil and gas company. They use completely different set of tools. So you're going to have to relearn everything everywhere that you go. And you're going to have to just rely on the documentation that is there, or being able to create your own documentation, or being able to have a good support system of people that are around you. But most of the time, you're going to be self-teaching at every single job that you go to. So it's going to be a little bit intimidating once you're seeing everything. But once you get the hang of it, it's not really anymore.
Yeah, because even with me, I'd be sitting on the meetings and I'm like, why did they pick me for this role? I'll be having some imposter syndrome. Yeah. I'll be like, how did I get here? So trust me, I feel the same way sometimes.
Yeah,
so.
And you're always going to feel like that, but it's nothing that sets you apart from anybody else. You're there because you deserve to be there. You put in the work, and mm-hmm. it's just a matter of believing that. And then also, I take time to study too outside of work. So if I don't understand something, I'm going to be outside of work studying, especially the first couple of months, so that I can actually make an impact while I'm there, because you still want to add value to the company at the end of the day.
Okay, so also too, and just to tab on that, mm-hmm. so how did you grow your career? Is it by self-studying, always staying on top of everything? So how did you grow your cybersecurity career?
Yeah, majority of it has definitely been self-studying, and then also just surrounding myself with the right people. Whenever I'm at a new job, typically you'll see who the go-to person is for questions, right? So you'll see who everybody's going to that has the answers. Usually it's someone who's been there a very long time, or it's someone who's very technical. So that's the person who I like to kind of learn things from. I'll just kind of attach to them, be like, hey, understand their thought process, understand how they troubleshoot. And then typically they're very helpful if they see that you're wanting to learn and want to actually, you know, have a thirst for the knowledge. They'll teach you everything that they know. So that's been really helpful as well too.
Okay, that's good. Like, because even as me, when I first became an ISO, I was confused about the position. I don't know what was going on. It was like 6 months. I didn't understand. So what I started doing, which is during my position, I had mentors. Mm-hmm. So I would just go to somebody and just show me what you do, how you do it, and I'll just attach myself. As long as they see you doing the work, they'll mm-hmm. help you out. So yeah. I did like that.
Yeah. That's the best way to do. And I'll sit and take very detailed notes. So like step by step of how to do everything, that's really important. And then also it helps reinforce if you teach people. So it's like you've been there for a little while, someone new comes in, and you're able to reinforce what you know by teaching them from scratch. I feel like you don't really know anything until you're able to teach it. That's like the best way to be able to go about that.
I agree with that 100%. Because even me now, I have people I just show the ropes around. And I'd be surprised on how much I know. I'd be like, I know this much? Oh, okay, so I'm supposed to be here now, you know?
Yeah. And definitely keep track of everything you do also.
Yeah.
Most people don't keep track of like their accomplishments and things like that. It's all the projects that you work on, keep track of it, because you do more than you'll think.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to take that for myself.
Mm-hmm, you should.
So how is it like being a Black woman in tech? How's it treating you?
I love it. I mean, now, especially, there's so much more of us. Like, it's definitely, like, I just earlier today had, are you familiar with Baddies in Tech? They have a Build-A-Thon hackathon going on this past 2 weeks. So I did a workshop with them and just seeing all the women that are there. And especially after, I don't know if it was just post-pandemic, there's been a surge of not just Black women, but Black people in general in tech. So it's created a different space from when I first came into it. It was very, like, secluded and, like, you didn't really have a lot of people that were, is apart from the ones that you work with directly that were in the field. So now we get things like Techsgiving, Afrotech, Baddies in Tech has their conference, Render HRL, which is for software engineers. Just having that type of community is really just, it's powerful, it's beautiful, and we're able to help and give back to each other. So I love it now. Even I loved it before too, but even now so much more.
Yeah, me too. I went to a couple of mixers. I think it was Black in Tech recently. Not called Black Men in Tech or Black in GovTech.
Oh, yeah, Black Men in Tech. Yeah, they're a great one.
So I went to a mixer and I see so many Black women there. It's more women than men at some of these events. So it's definitely growing. But can you double down on, like, how is it, like, to work as a woman in the tech field? Or you feel dominated by the men, or are you the only person in the meetings?
How you will. You're always going to feel like that, especially as a woman and then especially as being Black. So a lot of people in leadership, there's not even a lot of Black people in leadership, and there's very few Black women that are in leadership positions. So you kind of feel like obligated to be one of the ones that has to get there so that you can help pull other people up into those roles. That's one of the things where it's like when I was able to actually hire people into roles is when I felt the most impact that I was able to make as a Black woman in tech and be able to get people that look like me into those roles. But from what I've experienced, I haven't really experienced anything as far as discrimination wise. But what I've seen is that there are not malpractice, but like misappropriated funds or things like that when it comes to companies, how they treat certain employees. Especially we don't really know how to ask for like what our worth is. So I wasn't taught that at a young age. I was getting like almost 70,000 in a role that I could have got 200,000 in, but I didn't know what to ask for at the time. So things like that where nobody's really going to tell you, you don't really have anyone to look out for you and say, hey, this is what you should be asking for versus now I'm able to do that for other people. But it's just a matter of doing your research, make sure you do market research and stay on top of things, and then also know your worth and be willing to ask for that.
Yeah, even for me, I was trying to do a role recently, and I know I'm the best person for the role. Mm-hmm. So they was kind of lowballing me, asking for like maybe 120 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, like if you really want me, like pay me the money. I'm just tired. Just pay me the money. I'm like, listen, I can run this whole program. Just pay me the money. So.
And they have the funds, which is crazy.
They have it.
It's not coming out of your pocket. At the end of the day, they have the funds available. And what a lot of people don't realize too, with government contracting, everything, you can see all the contracts that are awarded. So you can go and look up the contract that's awarded, how much is getting set for the role that you're in. They call it billets and different labor categories. So you can see what the government is paying that company for the seat that you're in, and you can see how much you're making off of that. And a lot of times it's double, triple, whatever else that they're getting on top of what you're making. So it could be better sometimes just cut out the middleman and go directly for the roles that you want yourself.
Yeah, definitely. You'll be surprised how much they charge you.
Oh, yeah.
Some positions like 300 an hour, sometimes 400 an hour. You got to do your research.
Yeah.
They got it. It's trying to penny pinch.
Yeah. That happens a lot. You'll see that a lot.
So for entry level salary in cybersecurity, what would somebody be looking at? Because you see online people talking about, oh yeah, you can get like 100,000 after 6 weeks or something like that. What is a realistic entry level salary?
It's different for everything. So like enterprise side is a little bit different from government side. Mm-hmm. Government has more inflated cybersecurity salaries for entry level compared to enterprise. And also is dependent on location. So cybersecurity specifically in certain regions pays a lot more versus if you're in the Midwest or if you're on the East Coast, obviously the cost factor is going to be where your location is. And then also having a clearance. If you have a clearance, you'll get paid a lot more just for that role. I know a lot of people, like if you know Simone Bees, she talks a lot about government contracting overseas is what she did. Overseas entry level, someone who could come in with no knowledge doing help desk will get like 150 to 200K. And they'll get sponsored for a clearance out there, which is completely different versus being in the States doing help desk. Mm-hmm. So it's also dependent on where you're at with it. But in the DMV area, if you're just entry level into cybersecurity, you can make 6 figures easily with the clearance. And even without a clearance, you can still get 6 figures. It's just a matter of being positioned in a place that's has a need for it.
So just mainly just do your market research.
Yeah, do your market research. But I would say anywhere from like 65 to 130K is like typical for entry level, depending on where you are.
Okay, I got you. So like for a cybersecurity engineer, what's the salary for that? What's the range for that?
So it's also dependent on the years of experience with cybersecurity engineering. If you're more like entry level cybersecurity engineer, you can get 150 and up. If you've been doing cybersecurity engineering for a long time, like mid level to senior level, then you can expect 200K and up.
Okay. So how do you network? Like, what do you use the network?
Always going to events, like 24/7 going to events. There's a lot of, especially now that I'm doing small business, there's a lot of small business government contracting summits that are out there. So I'm always going to that. If you work in any type of government military space and you have like a .gov or .mil email, you can go to all of the different DMV like government summits that they have as well for free. And then all social media networking is one of the best. So like when we were getting started, there was Black Tech Twitter that was just started. Black Tech Pipeline was started by Paris. And so met a lot of people through networking on there as well.
Okay, that's
and
good.
LinkedIn too. I can't forget LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn.
I just don't use it as much as I should.
I love LinkedIn. That's how I find people. I find everybody I need to know on LinkedIn. So Herlaine, what are some of the pros and cons of government contracting?
The pros and cons. One, the pro, obviously the money. number two, I would say being able to be in a position where you can employ people and help make impact within your community. That's really important to me as well. Also, another pro that I can think of is just having being able to have a small business and being able to foster that type of work environment that you want, because you don't always get that when you're working for a government contractor. So being able to be an entrepreneur, you can work for yourself and you can create an inclusive environment. You can create one that has salary transparency or whatever it is that you want that you didn't see from those other different companies. The cons that will say number one is it's hard to find the information when it comes to government contracting. Everything is scattered and it's not like all into one place. So we've done a lot of market research to try to figure out how we can actually sell to the government. The procurement process is actually really long too. So that's another con for it. So it's like I have to still be able to pay my people, even if I'm not getting paid by the government for a year or two, when it takes to be able to get that contract situated, even when you do actually win the contract. So we're going to be providing those services to the different agencies, but we get paid after 60 days. It can be 60 to 90, depending on the contract itself. So we provide those services and then we have to bill the government. They pay us back after 30 days. So that whole process, those employees still need to get paid. So you need to have your accounting in order really well when it comes to that. And then if you ever get audited, you just need to have the federal accounting guidelines and compliance regulations that they have are really extensive. So making sure that you're always in compliance and following those too, that's another con. But if you have a really good team for accounting, they'll take care of that and bookkeeping as well.
Okay, so how did you get into government contracting as a business?
As a business, so I was working with a company called Apex Systems. Mm-hmm. And so when I was working with them, they were not giving us shift differential. So with the SOC Security Operations Center, you have to work 24/7 with the shifts. So there's a day shift, evening shift, and then mid shift at night. And so I was working the evening shift and some other people that were on my team were working mid shift and none of us were getting our shift differential. So I had brought it up to them when I was first getting hired on and they lied and said, no, that's built into your salary. And then I later found out that it wasn't. So I asked them basically, like, you need to give us the shift differential, not just for me, but for all these people that you haven't paid it to. And then it became a whole issue. And eventually I was able to get the contracting officer and the PMO office to get onto my side about it. And like, this is illegal what you guys are doing. So I had to just basically threaten them, like, I'm going to get to, you know, the Department or Workforce Labor. I'm going to contact them and contact the FAR, which is Federal Acquisition Regulation. Let them know what you guys are doing. And then afterwards they apologized, quote unquote. And then they had to give back pay for like 2 years to me and all the other employees that were on that contract for the shift differential that they were basically pocketing. So things like that, where there's not that transparency and they're not giving us what's owed to us by the government. That's another reason that made me want to get into it. And with that situation, I was able to talk to the contracting office and be able to switch to being a 1099 employee and subcontracting with them under my own company. So taking advantage of that opportunity as it came to and building that relationship with the customer, they already knew my work ethic and they saw everything that I was able to do. So they didn't want to lose me as an employee just because I had a bad employer. So they were willing to bring us on for SciTech.
Okay, and just to highlight this, how did you register?
Oh, with SAM.gov.
SAM.gov.
Yeah, so SAM.gov is where you go to register. That's where all the contracting opportunities are based out of. SAM.gov is relatively easy to go through. It's a lot of, it's an expensive process to be able to register in it. But once you fill everything out, you'll get a UEIE, which is a unique identifier. You'll get a CAGE code. And then you can register after and get a DUNS number. And those are what you use to actually bid on contracts. So one of the routes you can go is bidding on contracts. You will be a prime government contractor on that contract. Or you can be a subcontractor under a prime, which is what I'm doing right now. Because another issue sometimes is a lot of these government contracts that you're trying to bid on say, hey, you don't have the past performance for this. So typically a small business will work as a subcontractor under other primes, and then they'll be able to build that up as their capabilities, saying, hey, we worked on all these other ones. We can be a prime. Now we have the capabilities.
Okay, that's good. And then you can get like a women-owned, black-owned certification?
Yep. So with the small business set-asides, like you mentioned, they have the women-owned small business, veteran-owned small business, minority-owned small business, as well as 8A certification, which is for economically disadvantaged. And then there's another one for like Native American. They have all those different set asides, whereas basically as long as you fall under any of them, you get the certification for your company and the government has to award that. So I think it's at 23% of all government contracting dollars has to go to those small business set asides.
That's good. That's good to know because I'm starting to get into myself and I'm learning the ins and outs myself slowly. So Herlane, what is your goals for the next 5 years? I always want to time stamp it so in the future I can come and holler at you.
That would be nice. I'm going to look back on this too. Definitely. So one of our company goals is to get a facility clearance. That's something that's been kind of a hurdle. So the same way you have to get sponsored for a clearance as an individual person, the company has to get sponsored for it as well by a prime contractor. So working on building those relationships so that we can find a prime that's willing to sponsor us so that we can go after those top secret contracts and whatever else that we want to go after that requires a facility clearance. That's a number one goal. Number two, I don't know if it's a little risky for the next 5 years, but I definitely want to build it to like 100 employees. Maybe that might be like a 10-year goal, but if we can get to 100 employees, I'll be really happy with that. That's another one of our goals. We just started SciTech Academy, which is a nonprofit portion of SciTech Solutions. So we want to be able to give back to the community. With that, like a SciTech Academy, I want to build a school eventually so we can do like cybersecurity technology training. That would be like 100% free and funded fully by the government. That's another one of our goals too.
I can't wait to see it. I'm definitely going to be checking it out. Hey, I might need a job, too.
Yeah, of course. Well, hit me up. I'll let you know. You'll be the first to know.
I got you. So, Herlane, where can people find you?
So on LinkedIn, for sure, you guys can always hit me up on LinkedIn.com /Herlane.m. And that's H-U-R-A-L-A-I-N-M. And then Instagram, I'm all SciTech Solutions and also Life in Herlane. They can hit me up there as well as email and number. I can give you that so you can put on the contact information for YouTube so they can also reach out if they have any questions.
So thank you, Herlane, for everything. So you got to pay some bills. Check out the Tech Woke newsletter. We're going to release a newsletter every month. And it's going to have more condensed interviews with people in cybersecurity. Subscribe to the podcast on all platforms. Also on the Cash App, hey, if you want to donate, the Cash App is going to be in the description in case you want to donate. We're going to keep it going no matter what, but any donation will help out. And also subscribe to YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like the video, and also comment down below and also share it to anybody that's interested in getting into cybersecurity. That's pretty much it, everybody. Thank you for watching the Tech Woke Podcast. Peace out. I'll see you on the next one.